Hello, and welcome to the Commonweal Policy Podcast. I'm Craig DL, I'm the Head of Policy and Research at Commonweal, and this week I'm joined by two special guests. We have Will Stringer from the Sortition Foundation and Alice Kinghorn-Gray from the Electoral Reform Society Scotland. Hello, the pair of you. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, thanks. How are you?
It's been a fun day. I'm always look forward to recording the podcast. Always good to have guests on the show. So I'll just start off by getting both of you to quickly explain who you are and what your groups are. So Will, who are the Sortition Foundation?
Yeah, it's always deep when somebody asks you who you are, isn't it? So yeah, I'm Will. I work on the campaign to see a House of Citizens happen in Scotland. And I work within Sortition Foundation, which Sortition champions deliberative democracy. So doing both Sortition services for citizens assemblies, which is basically just the recruitment side. So that the side that many people are pretty mystified about. And on top of that, we advocate for change in democratic systems. So yeah, that's a bit about Sortition.
Hi there. Thanks for having us, Craig. I'm Alice. I'm at ERS Scotland now. The Electoral Reform Society is a UK-wide organisation with its head office in London. So because we cover quite the devolved nations as well, our campaign approaches differ somewhat. So in London, I think people they've heard of organisation would be more familiar with campaigns for PR at Westminster, reform of the House of Lords. But obviously we've got a different setup here in Scotland. So our campaign for a number of years now has really been focusing on local democracy and kind of addressing and highlighting the local democratic deficit we have in Scotland, despite devolution. But similar to Will and the Sortition Foundation, which is why we've kind of joined forces on this, is that we're really also interested in how do we evolve democracy to make it fit for the 21st century? You know, we don't see it as static. Electoral democracy is one type of democracy, but we really need to be thinking about democratic innovations to go with the times of social transformation, technological transformation, a whole host of things that we've been seeing across the world as well. So I think it's not just, Scotland, England, UK, this is worldwide as well. So yeah, I hope that describes a bit.
Yep, and it's one of those democratic innovations and transformations that we're going to be talking about on today's show. It's an issue that we have spoken about on the podcast before, back in November, and it's one that Commonweal, Sortition Foundation and ERS have all worked together on for many years now. We produced a paper back in 2017 on it. This is the idea of a House of Citizens in the Scottish Parliament. So the Scottish Parliament is what's known as a unicameral parliament. It only has one house, one chamber. We don't have a Senate above the House or a House of Lords like they do in the UK. Instead, there's other ways of the Parliament scrutinising itself, scrutinising the legislation coming through. And we'll talk about how those maybe aren't working as well as they could. But one proposed solution for this is to have a citizens assembly that would oversee the Scottish Parliament and its legislation. So, Will, can you explain what a citizens' assembly is in general? Because folk might have heard of this in other contexts. There has been two major citizens' assemblies in Scotland in the last year. So can you explain what a citizens' assembly is and then how this House of Citizens is similar but slightly different?
Yeah, totally. Yes, a citizens' assembly is where you get a group of people together from the area, so like Scotland, and they're brought together to discuss a particular issue or issues and reach a conclusion about what they think should happen next. So the people who take part are chosen really to reflect the demographics of that area. So whether that's age, gender, location as well. We didn't want to create a citizen assembly and everyone to be from the Central Belt, for example. That wouldn't be very helpful. Reflecting those demographics as well as relevant attitudes towards something. So their preferences maybe on a topic. So you have a kind of diversity of opinion, and people are allowed to come together and discuss that and listen to experts and have a deliberation over what kind of the best action is next. So sort of what a citizen assembly is, there has been, as you said, Craig, there has been two in the last year within Scotland. And there's also been quite a few across the world as well happening. You know, Ireland is probably the one which is most prolific, and people may have maybe even more familiar with that than the Scottish one. You know, famously around you know, abortion rights, and the recent one which was on gender equality as well. So yeah, they've been used to tackle some pretty substantive challenges, so yeah, it's coming up with solutions that that really the people and not politicians get to decide what the action or the next step forward is. And of course, in 7 days' time is the Climate Assembly. They produce their recommendations, which is going to be exciting. So seeing what they've drawn up together as a group of about 100 people from across Scotland, and they've listened to experts from across the field, and yeah, they're going to put through their recommendations. And then that usually, so how it happens in Scotland at least, it then goes to the Scottish Parliament. They'll consider those recommendations and then respond to them. Although, yeah, that's the bit which is maybe a bit of the sort of the challenging part, yeah. Sometimes.
I was very proud to be part of the Climate Assembly. I was one of the folk brought in to give evidence to it, and I'll link to it in the description below, but we actually ran a podcast just after the preliminary report for the Climate Assembly came out, in which we got one of the organisers on and one of the participants, one of the citizen participants from the Assembly. It was a really fascinating chat, seeing the experience of what it's like to actually be part of that Assembly. So yeah, well, this idea of the actual House of Citizens in the Parliament, how is that slightly different from, say, the Climate Assembly?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what you were saying about the where the root of this was. So like House of Citizens, there was a couple of starts to that story. One is being with Commonweal itself, obviously, with that paper in 2017 that recommended the citizen-led second chamber. And the next is with that 2020, when the Citizen Assembly on the Future of Scotland drew up its recommendations, and one of that was the House of Citizens. And it's probably one of the most exciting recommendations, or at least for us, for me it is, because it's really radically changing how things are in terms of democracy in Scotland. And House of Citizens is essentially a second chamber. So you can think of it a bit like the House of Lords, but without all the stuff we don't like about the House of Lords. So it would do similar functions, things like scrutinising legislation, improving accountability of Scottish Parliament, but also crucially, it would hardwire deliberation into Scottish Parliament processes. So deliberation just being like a discussion leading to an action or an ask. So what I was just chatting about in terms of citizens' assemblies. And you could think of it as a citizen jury. So instead of hereditary peers, like we've got in the House of Lords, you would have citizens that are selected by a lottery system. That would ensure like the key demographics, like age and location within Scotland would be covered. And citizens would come together and they decide on issues that are important to them, whether that's housing or perhaps rural mental health. So that's quite different from citizen assemblies and how we've been seeing them occur, where they've been usually given a challenging topic. This is about them actually deciding that agenda themselves. And then the experts are brought in. And based on that, they have those deliberations similar to a citizen assembly. And then they've like real power in delivering on those actions and ensuring that those are followed through by, in this case, yeah, Scottish Parliament. So, I mean, when House of Citizens first floated by the Citizen Assembly, there was a lot of buzz because I think partly Scotland would be leading the way in centering ordinary like folk into decision-making. And this would be, obviously it's no silver bullet, but it would go a long way towards radically shifting away from from the kind of elite and often inaccessible system we have now, whilst doing functions that we do need in Scotland, like legislative scrutiny, but done by citizens, not by by politicians. Politicians scrutinizing themselves, that's not a great look. Yeah. We can see from down south just how well that goes.
I always like the description of a citizens' assembly, the analogy to a jury system, because it brings up the question that if ordinary citizens are trusted to judge whether someone has transgressed a law or not, then shouldn't we be trusted to judge the law itself and judge legislation coming through? So, Alice, if the citizens' assembly, if a House of Citizens is the solution, what exactly is the problem? Why do we need this? What are the deficiencies, especially in the Scottish parliamentary system?
Well, I think that's a right question. It's a good one, and I would probably answer it in two parts. The macro conditions, which I think are facing liberal democracies broadly in the world, which is the change in technologies that we're witnessing, like profound shifts in politics, economy, the kind of since the financial crash, actually, and all of this, how these factors impact our democratic systems is putting them under strain. And now we're kind of at a point where there is a shift to authoritarianism. And the answer we need to come up with is the answer isn't authoritarianism, the answer is more democracy.
Yeah.
In response to these wider, without being too abstract, right? So then bringing it down to the Scottish specific context is that, I mean, what we're also seeing is our political context is there isn't a, with the Scottish elections over, it's not radical to say that we're not seeing independence anytime soon. We've got now a 4-year parliamentary term changed to a 5-year parliamentary term, and we don't have a second chamber. Now, there are things we can do right here and right now to evolve our democracy in Scotland. We don't have to wait. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to really push in the direction of more democracy in answer to the big questions of our time and that our society faces. Does that kind of speak to what you...
Yeah. So maybe to take that a little further, though, why, if we need that better system of democracy in the Scottish Parliament, or we need that better system of scrutiny, I should say, why a citizens' assembly? Why not, say, give the parliamentary committees more power? Or why not have an elected upper house, the Senate that many democracies have?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, again, multiple points to this, that you've referenced yourself. There are a whole load of issues with the committee system. It does a lot of good. I would say we defend the committee system. It has more power in the Scottish Parliament than it does in England at Westminster. However, points that you've raised yourself is that there's relating to workload, relating to politicians scrutinising themselves. Really, is this kind of what we want to use our time and energy enhancing, when actually it functions? But we need to be, when we talk about evolving democracy, is because we don't want to just solidify more of the same. We actually want to look at what are the cracks, what are the issues, and we believe that a massive issue is that over time we have created, our systems have created careerist politicians that, for the best intentions in the world, are then in a system in which they're there to do a job, and it is their job and their livelihood is based on that job. Now, what we're looking for is a way to bring in ordinary citizens into the democratic process that is out with an election every, what's now going to be 5 years. Yeah. And actually, it's about the transformation of society as much as the transformation of our political systems. So, I mean, this isn't something that's unique to Scotland or to now or to the UK. I mean, you go back to to pre-World War One, and this was already an issue where you had working class enfranchisement, mainly white male, granted, working class enfranchisement, where they then would go into, become politicians, go into the system and didn't want to go back to the factory floor, right? So it's about addressing that actually our society and our democratic society could be a lot healthier if we have a second chamber, House of Citizens, citizens' assemblies, in which you have ordinary folk that go in, they are trusted and are trusted proxies in that system to make decisions, to scrutinize, to set agenda as well, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
And then come away from that and go back to their job. And they have to be supported to do that. But actually it's about trying to shift what politics is in society and how people relate to politics.
Yeah, one of my favorite idioms or quotes about politics, especially directed at career politicians who have been in the job just a little too long, is power does not corrupt. Fear corrupts. Perhaps the fear of losing power.
That's great. Totally. And just to add to that, I just want to like clarify, I think it's not about just having a go at politicians. That's not what I'm doing. And I also think that, you know, like we have a massive class issue in our politics, and it's that you have, I mean, in Scotland, it's like in the Scottish Parliament, you're four times more likely to have gone to a private school, right? Than if you're an MSP, then that, and that's not, that is representative of our society too, but then it reinforces it, and it reinforces the class inequality. And it doesn't mean that people that aren't from working class can't work in working class interests, because Tony Benn being an example, but it really, we're then creating issues that we then have to work out ways to mitigate against. Whereas with looking at the structure and looking at the system and trying to find alternatives, this is what this is all about.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned Tony Benn there, because I was going to quote his famous five questions for a democracy, which I think is always a good way of scrutinizing institutions. His five questions are: what power have you got? Where did you get it from? In whose interest do you use it? To whom are you accountable? And for me, probably the most important one, how do we get rid of you? Now, Will, you mentioned briefly how a citizens' assembly would be selected, that this would be a random process, but then balanced according to demography and geography. But one of the questions often I get asked when I'm talking about this is, how long would people serve on the assembly, and what would be the process for rotating folk out? Would it be a few at a time, or would you be replacing the entire assembly all at once, like we do with elections?
Yeah, I think the first thing to note is that, yeah, I think I've got a few responses on Twitter where we've talked about the campaign, where people have been like, well, you just set up another House of Lords, wouldn't you, if you have got these citizens who are elected? And it's like, well, not quite, you know, definitely not. You know, they'd hold 1 to 2 year terms. That's the important thing to note. And there's definitely areas which need to be worked out through the process of doing, as opposed to, so we would recommend a kind of pilot project which would deliver on the House of Citizens and the permanence, whilst working out some of those, like, okay, so how many, what's the proportion of people which would be turned over and at what time? And the part of the reason for that is that you don't want to get into a position where you've locked down everything that the House of Citizens will be for sure, and then you realize that there's this tiny, really frustrating crack, and it sort of frustrates the whole system. And there isn't many examples that we have across the world. You know, it would be about Scotland taking a huge step in the right direction. The closest we've got is Ost-Belgian model, which is in sort of East Belgium, so German-speaking part of Belgium. And that's the kind of closest example. And that's been working quite well for the last couple of years. So we can certainly borrow some things from there as to what's working, and definitely that sort of shorter term and potentially not everyone being turned over at the same time is sort of where it's at. So that would be my response. Yes, we've got some things which are fixed. Other bits, we definitely need to work out through doing and actually let's get this started, that process of working it out.
Let's move on to the political campaign for this. We mentioned before that there have been papers and there has been a long-running campaign for many years now, but this really took a big step forward in the late part of 2020 when the Scottish Citizens Assembly made this recommendation for a House of Citizen. And again, I'll link to the podcast we did in November celebrating that. It was a surprise to me when I saw it was when I read the report and just about jumped off my seat when I read it. How have the political parties reacted to that report as a whole and this recommendation in particular?
Should I jump in?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the kind of going back, maybe I think we could compare it to what the feeling was just as the Citizens Assembly kicked off, and there was a lot of skepticism, right?
Yeah.
A lot. So I think in comparison to that, I'm quite positively surprised at, you know, the kind of the buy-in post report, post Citizens Assembly, from across the political spectrum, to be honest. And the parliamentary debate, don't know if you guys watched that on the Citizens Assembly, you know, there was formal buy-in, you know, for the report. All parties have officially agreed to holding government to account to enact the Citizens Assembly's report and points. Now, I think that it's hard to say. I wouldn't want to prematurely say that we should be expecting something right now because we have just had an election, right? So we need to also see I think we're at a point where we're like, okay, the manifestos have come out. Most of the left of center and central parties have got citizens assemblies or, you know, the Labour Party manifesto, Scottish Labour's, makes reference to something citizen-esque, you know. So there's a sentiment you can see that's translated through, and that's also, I think, been enhanced by the success of the Citizens Assembly of Scotland in kind of managing some of the fears of the other political parties. However, there's a lot of vagueness too, but we're still at the beginning of the term, so we there'll be a lot of work to do. I think it's a bit too soon to kind of say what's going to happen right now, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's been a lot of, a lot of good words spoken about the value that each of the political parties had, or the value of the Citizens Assembly to each of the political parties. You know, no one wanted to be seen as sort of rejecting the citizen voice. And you know, it did an amazing job in really presenting that as a unified, you know, we are the citizens, you know, voice. You know, even the video content that they were producing was really strong in enforcing that. So it became a bit like, what you couldn't really say, oh, actually, I don't really like any of the stuff that you, or I don't agree with the Citizens Assemblies. But yeah, we are in a position where, you know, I think you say, three of the five main political parties, you know, at least made direct reference to Citizens Assemblies. And then you should say Scottish Labour was sort of made a reference to, you know, a People's Parliament or something. Not quite sure what that is, but it could be. Could be a Citizens Assembly or a House of Citizens. But it's about moving people from that position of being like, okay, yes, we're quite happy with Citizens Assemblies, but actually let's move that one step forward and go, actually citizen-led second chamber is where it's at, not just with and staying with Citizens Assemblies and giving them, you know, particular issues, although that's of course important you know, it's not about House of Citizens and getting rid of all citizen assemblies either. You know, it's, they both can work in tandem. But we launched a campaign video in May, and that had a really great response, not necessarily from like political parties, but from kind of general public. You know, it was sort of like 25,000 views. We were sort of blown away by people, like how much interest there was. And a couple of thousand people have signed the petition for a House of Citizens. And, you know, the video was great, actually, the process of making the video, because we worked with somebody who had been a panel member in Aberdeenshire. And, you know, her experience was it was amazing talking to her and a few other people who'd been involved in these citizens' assemblies, because, you know, I haven't been a participant on that. And I realized how abstract my belief in it was very much. Yeah. I believe in this as a deliberative democracy, bringing people together, all of those sorts of things. But actually hearing someone be like, oh yeah, well, I'd never even heard of this before. It was, you know, I got this phone call and we, you know, I kind of went in because, you know, I wanted to do something for Scotland or something. And then when I, you know, heard about these issues, like I was just talking to other people about it and they hadn't heard about these things either. And I thought that it was quite infectious, actually, like hearing that. So yeah, we've had a kind of positive start in terms of the campaign. And certainly we're hoping to, we've been focusing on citizen involvement. So just like people knowing what a second chamber is, because let's face it, it can, and why it matters. Getting through some of the language, because citizens assemblies to most people is pretty vague as a term. So yeah, it's really defining that and also defining a House of Citizens so that doesn't get diluted down either.
Yeah, I guess one of my concerns with the promises we've seen so far is that we might end up with something like an annual citizens assembly or maybe specialist assemblies like the climate assembly. And that would be an amazing thing. That is big progress for our democracy. But it's not quite that House of Citizens. And as you say, I think we need both, and they both fit different roles. And actually something that we at Commonweal have advocated for in our local democracy work and trying to get, you know, a municipal level local democracy in Scotland, is that those municipal councils would be overseen by citizens assemblies from their local community. So there's definitely space for embedding citizen direct democracy involvement at all levels of our governance. But Alice, have you got anything you'd like to add to this?
Well, just, I mean, completely agree. And it, just off the back of what you're both saying, that I think sometimes what doesn't get talked about enough, like myself included, is also the impact that these experiences have on people, the people who are involved. Yes. And they're the great advocates for it. And Craig, I know you had some assembly members on, you've had podcasts with them and stuff. And so, you know, like we can talk about it all we want and the benefits and stuff, but it's really powerful listening to folk that have been involved and how much it impacts them. Yeah. And how it, like, And that's kind of the flip side of it. It's the fact that obviously we need to evolve and kind of make our democratic systems healthier and make them better, much better. But equally, it's the impact that it has on people and the society and making this a societal issue about the health of our society as much as our democracy, because they're intertwined. And, you know, we think that this is, and when you're talking about at the local level, absolutely, that's a lot of what the ERS Scotland campaign is about how do we embed deliberative mechanisms at the local level for scrutiny, but for agenda setting again, you know, not just ticking off what's being done or, you know, saying go back and revise, but actually saying coming up with what do we want for our communities, what do you know, and setting the agenda. And that as seeing as something that is like highly political, highly important in combating alienation in our society too. And we have a declaration on local democracy that people can have a look at. It's quite a broad declaration describing and setting out the principles that we believe Scotland should have in orienting its local democracy, speaking to a lot of the things that we've discussed here that folks can have a look at, share, discuss, sign if they agree. So I think just to completely agreeing with what you're both saying there.
Yeah. We'll stick a link to that in the description below the podcast. So both of you, just as we come to the end, what is next for your respective organisations? What are you going to be focusing on for the next few months? Alice, what are the ERS getting up to beyond what you just said?
In ERS Scotland, we are looking at the links between social deprivation, poverty, and electoral turnout, voter turnout, and actually how deliberative processes, kind of what I'm speaking to, can relate to combating alienation and enhance community control.
And Will, we're next for Sortition Foundation.
So we'll be doing still recruiting for citizen assemblies, but alongside all of that bit of work, we'll be doing events throughout. So we've got one with Voices for Scotland actually coming up on the 1st of July. If anyone who's listening, is part of a grassroots group or a community group or a party branch who would like to have us along, that would also be amazing to just talk to people. It definitely provokes discussion. I'd love to do that throughout the summer, kind of summer of talking to people. Sounds like the like antidote to the last year.
Remember when we were allowed to talk to people in person as well. Oh, well, thank you, Will, Alice. Thank you so much for coming onto the show. That's been a fascinating chat. And just for everyone else out there who's listening, just a reminder that Commonweal is an organization that is entirely funded by folk like yourselves, giving us a fiver or a tenner a month. We don't have big donors. We don't have government funding. We don't have corporate sponsors. We don't even have adverts on our website. Everything we do, from this podcast to our policy work, like the work we've done in the House of Citizens, it is all supported by citizens, by you. So if you've enjoyed what we're doing and you want to support us, then please consider clicking the donate button and signing up. For everyone else, we have a fascinating chat next week when I'm taking a little virtual trip to Wales to talk about community banking, which I'm really looking forward to. So come back next week and we'll see you then.